The recording has been started. You may now begin.
Thank you, Noreen. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Next Generation RDS PDP Working Group call on the 29th of November 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call, and attendance will be taken on the Adobe Connect room only. If you are, however, on the audio bridge only, could you please let yourselves be known right now? Hearing no one, I'd like to remind you all to please remember to state your names before speaking for recording purposes and to mute yourselves and not talking to avoid any background noise. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Natalie. This is Chuck Gomes. Welcome, everyone, to our call this week. Let me ask right up front if there are any statement of interest updates. Seeing no hands or hearing no one, I'll assume not. Let me preface the call with an admission that I've about halfway through my vacation, I caught a little bug, and so my voice could give out on me today. If it does, Susan has volunteered to pick up the ball. I'll do the best I can. And I want to thank Susan for the good job she did chairing in my absence and the leadership team for carrying the ball the last couple weeks, and all of you for continuing to proceed with the work we have in front of us. The agenda is in front of us. Let's jump right in. So Lisa or Marika, if you can bring up the call handout for today. Thank you very much. And all of you have scrolling capability, so please feel free to follow along. On slide 2, you can see the agenda as well as in the Adobe Connect window on the upper right. So let's go right at it. Based on the results of last week's meeting, we conducted a poll. And the results came out very strong in favor of the statement that was made. And if you look at, we'll look at those results in just a moment, but if you look at slide 3, you'll see that we are taking a what we're calling a building block approach, deliberating on each purpose one by one. You'll recall that we formed some drafting teams to develop definitions of 9 purposes that came from the EWG report. And we spent a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks, working on those. The teams did a good job. And so what we're going to do, what we're doing now, is we're going to take a look at each purpose one at a time and talk about whether the purpose should be considered legitimate for collecting some registration data, and if so, why. Next, we're going to identify data elements required to support the purposes, and keep in mind that we're going to defer discussion of collection conditions or access controls, which might be applied to data elements, until later. We will get to those. That's essential. And note that any agreement on legitimacy of one purpose doesn't preclude additional purposes being agreed as legitimate for the same or other data. And you can, you've seen these examples at the bottom of slide 3 several times, so we won't go through those. Going to slide 4 then, we're going to start out with, we started out last week talking about technical resolution after finishing the teams, going over the team's work on that. And we started deliberation on whether or not technical resolution is a legitimate purpose for collecting some data. And there are some questions there that I won't repeat again that are just a subset of questions. There are probably many others we could ask as to whether a purpose is legitimate. I'll let you review those again on your own. And then we started out and we reached agreement on a statement in our meeting last week. And there were on the call, there were no objections. There were a couple no responses with comments in the results. Again, I'll let you review those on your own, but we had 92% support from those who participated in the poll that technical issue resolution with a legitimate purpose for registration data collection at minimum for resolving issues with domain name resolution. Again, remembering that we haven't decided which data elements, but collection of some elements was agreed to by 92% of the people on the poll. Now, if you go to slide 5, then, you'll see the statement, the definitions, two definitions of technical issues, okay? The one that we focused on in the poll and had pretty strong agreement on in the meeting last week, the technical issues associated with domain name resolution is information collected to enable contact of the relevant contacts to facilitate tracing, identification, and resolution of incidents related to issues associated with domain name resolution by persons who are affected by such issues or persons tasked directly or indirectly with the resolution of such issues on their behalf. Again, that one there was strong support for and no objections on the call last week, and then 92% basically supported that as a purpose for collecting some data elements yet to be determined for technical issue resolution. There was mixed responses, quite a bit of support, mixed responses on the other definition, and the leadership team, in particular Lisa, crafted the second definition of technical issue resolution. Excuse me. And you can read it there. In fact, rather than straining my voice, let me ask Lisa if she would read that one and go over it.
Sure, Chuck. This is Lisa Parker for the record. But as you recall, last week we actually did try a show of hands or the red-green check and X marks in Adobe Connect. Looking at a couple of different variations of statements related to services that might be associated with a domain name. Some of the comments that were made last week were that it would be helpful for us to bring in some examples into the definition in order to clarify what the scope is. There were some comments that it should be tied to operational issues associated with the services. And so to try to bring those concepts in to a definition of technical issue resolution that we could use as a starting point for discussion tonight. We crafted the second paragraph that you see on this slide. So this is not to replace what we discussed last week with regard to domain name resolution, but to move us further into discussing additional an additional purpose or an additional refinement to this purpose. And that would be technical issues related to services associated with unresolvable domain names. Building on the definition provided by Drafting Team 1, would be information collected to enable contact of the relevant contacts to facilitate tracing, identification, and resolution. And here's where it becomes different, of operational issues related to services associated with an unresolvable domain name. For example, website unreachable because the domain name cannot be resolved. or email undeliverable because a domain name cannot be resolved. And then continuing with the definition that Drafting Team 1 provided. Back to you.
Sorry about that. I put myself on mute. Let's try that again. This is Chuck. So what we're going to do now is talk about this second definition of technical issues to see whether there's support by working group members on the call for this as a legitimate purpose for collecting some data elements in the RDS for technical issues as defined here. And I'm going to start off by just opening it up for discussion. What do you think about that? Do you support that? Why do you not support it? Why? Are there any questions about what is meant by this definition? And again, we're on slide 5. The second bullet. Jim, go ahead. Are you on mute, Jim? We're not hearing anything. Still not hearing anything, Jim. Not sure what's going on. Okay, he's going to reconnect. In the meantime, anybody else want to jump in, please raise your hand. And if you need to dial out, Jim, as you can see, just provide a dial-out number to Natalie, and she'll do that. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Mark. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I guess I'll start off since Jim's mic is having trouble. I guess reading these two, I'm not really sure what the second statement is trying to accomplish. The first one I can get behind. It states, technical issues associated with domain name resolution. That's the purpose. I understand that it makes sense. And the second one, we're adding this related to services associated with something breaking because of domain name resolution. And I'm just not sure what that accomplishes. As I read it, I don't think it matters. If you have an unresolvable domain name, if there's an issue with the domain name, then the purpose of it is to aid in resolving that, whether it's because of related services or just because you want the domain name to resolve. I'm just not sure that the second statement really adds anything or what it's trying to accomplish. I'm good with the first statement. I'm not sure what we're doing with the second one, and I can't seem to get behind it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. This is Chuck again. And so before I go to Jim again, so am I understanding you correctly that you think that the second one is really covered by the first? Is that a correct conclusion on my part?
I do. I think the second one's in a way a subset. You're saying technical issues related to services with an unresolvable domain name. The first one is saying technical issues associated with domain name resolution. So we're adding some qualifiers. I don't see what we're gaining by saying technical issues related to services. Who cares what it's related to? It's an unresolvable domain name. There's issues with it. It needs to be resolved. So, you know, unless I'm missing something, I just don't see what that second statement is trying to accomplish.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for making that clear. And notice that there's a couple people agreeing in the chat as well. Let's go to Jim.
So, Jim Galvin, for the record. Jimmy, just check. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I was actually part of the design team for this, and the distinction being made here in these first two bullets, in these two choices, is an issue that was discussed within the design team, and actually I'm not comfortable with the change that is being proposed here for the second bullet, because the distinction to be made here is whether or not the issue is about the domain name or about things that you do with the domain name. And we carefully had that discussion and made the distinction to focus on domain name resolution. It's about the domain name itself. It's not about services associated with it, because, you know, services associated with it is far and away beyond the remit of ICANN. In any case, we don't collect information about domain names to support all of the, you know, fast and furious and interesting things that one might do with the domain name. It's really about the name itself and the resolution of that name itself and issues associated with the DNS in particular. It's not about websites. It's not about phone services or anything else. So I find that I can't support these proposed changes. I much prefer the prior. And to speak directly to the way that Mark was referring to it, I agree. In any case, domain name resolution, you know, I mean, it encompasses what's in the second sentence. In the second proposal. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. This is Chuck again. And again, we're not changing the first one, okay? So we've already accepted as a tentative conclusion based on the poll results the first one. The second one was being added as a possible addition, in addition to the first. And so far we have some people speaking out against that and supporting it in the chat as well. Is there anyone who thinks that the second one adds something that isn't covered in the first one? And if so, please let us know what you think it adds so that people can respond to that. Jim, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record again. Yes, the second one adds things that are not covered by the first and adds things that don't belong there. It talks about the services associated with a domain name. That's things that are not parsed by design. That was an explicit choice, as opposed to just being about the domain name itself. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, and I should have qualified my statement, so thanks for doing that for me. I appreciate that. Does anybody think that there's value in considering the second statement as a definition of technical issues? Is it needed? Several people have said it's really not needed. It's a subset of the first one, and like Jim said, the services like a website and so forth are really not part of ICANN's mission, so we shouldn't even go there. I'm not seeing, and I better look at the chat. Again, there's more agreement and in the chat. Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. I'm wondering, for those of you who were on last week's call, if you recall who was advocating for services, and I believe maybe it was Andrew gave several of the examples that were given or incorporated here on this slide. Also, just thinking back to the drafting team's definition, I know that there was some back and forth about whether or not to include the related services in the definition that came out of the drafting team, and the final text actually did include related services. So maybe someone who was part of that discussion in the drafting team, if that's you, Jim, or someone else, can explain maybe a little bit more about who was advocating for that and why.
Thanks, Lisa. This is Chuck. Again, if somebody can help explain why there was some support for going, mentioning the service-related services that may be impacted because of an unresolved domain name and operational issue, please raise your hand or let us know in the chat, and note that Jim doesn't recall who was advocating for that. What I'm concluding right now, there's nobody on this call that is advocating for it. So unless somebody thinks otherwise, I don't think we'll spend any more time on the second one. And we needed to follow up on it because there wasn't a final resolution on the call last week. There did seem to be some support for this, although apparently those people are on the call, or maybe it's just become clearer on this call here. Okay. All right. So let's go on then. Okay. We'll set that aside, and we'll stick with the agreement that we have on technical issues. Lisa, your turn.
Thanks, Jack. I just want to clarify the edits that are made in the first bullet here on this slide, slide five, to tie technical issues specifically to domain name resolution. Those would be reflected in the working group agreement that we'll record in our working document?
Yes.
Thank you.
So we have reached another working group agreement. Again, those are tentative, and we can always come back and revisit them, but there was very strong support in the poll and in the call last week. Thanks, Lisa, for clarifying that. So that then brings us to another important task. Okay, so we've reached a tentative conclusion that technical services, as defined last week and reiterated this week in the first bullet on the previous slide, are a legitimate reason for collecting some data elements for that purpose. So now we get to the sticky question, okay, which data elements should be collected for that purpose, the technical services purpose? And we've broken it down on the slide into categories. So, and just to facilitate going through them, the first area is technical contacts. Which technical contact information should be collected for this purpose? And I'll try and guide the discussion somewhat so that we don't just take it bit by bit, but I'm going to start off leaving it fairly open for discussion. And if you look ahead to the next slide, you'll see a list of currently collected data elements, okay? You can see domain name and registrant information, admin, technical. The next to last group there is the technical contacts. So feel free to refer to that if you need to. But in fact, you may want to just focus on slide 7 and those technical contacts there. And I'll open it up for discussion. Which of any of those technical contacts do you think should be collected for the purpose of technical issue resolution as we've defined it? And Lisa, go ahead and jump in.
Sorry, Chuck, that was an old hand.
Oh, okay, thanks. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson for the record. I just want to put out a plea here that we try not to let our notion of what we're used to in a who is response sort of cloud sort of this potential blank slate approach we can take. We all know what the existing who is records look like, but I think we should try not to use that as a starting point. And I actually like the way the review team one approached this rather than enumerate sort of existing who is records, they went more generic. They said, technical contact, registrant contacts, whatever those fields may be, information about name servers, information about server status, or information about expiry data. I don't want us to use the existing who is records as our starting point. I think we should look at what is the data that is needed to meet this purpose and fill it out from there. So I guess that's just sort of my plea to not let our not let our views of what has been cloud what could be.
Thank you, Mark. This is Chuck, and totally agree with you. The intent of showing these is not to use it as a starting point, but to just to facilitate discussion. And of course, the data elements are not limited to what we see here either. But are there any, at some point, because one of our questions is to define data elements, right, in the RDS, at some point we're going to have to get very specific. Does not have to be, like you said, the ones that we collect now, and it can be some new ones. It could be none of these, but we have decided that collecting some information with regard to fulfill the purpose of technical issues is legitimate. So we're going to have to define the technical the data elements, they don't have to be technical data elements, but data elements to fulfill this purpose. So, but thanks for clarifying that. Jim, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record. First, a clarification. It shouldn't say server status. It should say domain name status because, it's not about a server. It's about what the registry thinks about the name as to what's, delegated or deleted or pending delete or something like that, and various other things that might be present. And then I'll speak, for myself here, since I already identified myself as being part of the design team. I think that it should say technical contact. Information, both whoever and whatever that might be. When you get into specifics, it's like whatever is associated with technical contact. I would prefer to see registrant contact as subordinate to technical contact in the sense that if a technical contact exists, that's what you offer. If it doesn't, you fall back on the registrant, and that's the way that you do it. Again, not presupposing that things will work the way that they do today in who is and in that all contact elements are always all shown. So the generic definition. So technical contacts, name servers, domain name status, and expiry data, and then a registrant as a fallback contact if technical contacts are not available. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. This is Chuck. So you would not suggest making technical contact information a requirement, but an option. And if it's not provided, it would fall back to the registrar contact information. Is that correct?
No, not quite, Chuck. The data elements to be provided includes technical contact information. So whatever contact information is available for the technical contact and the other elements and the name servers and domain status and expiry, if technical contact information is not available because one was not specified, then you would provide the registrant contact information as a fallback. Always provide it.
Okay, and this is Chuck again, and what I was trying to clarify, it's up to us. We can make recommendations that technical contact information does have to be supplied, and you're kind of leaving the door open that if it's not, again, it's up to us to define what the requirements will be. But I think your point is well taken, and you give us a very good start. And when you say technical contact information, that's something we'll probably have to define in more detail. I mean, does it? What does it include? A physical address, an email address, a phone number, whatever. But we can deal with that later. I think that you've given us a really good start. That information, whatever we define that to be, as well as the name servers and the expiry dates. Did I get all the elements?
And the domain name status.
Yeah, domain name status, correct. Okay, thank you. Let's go to Mark.
Thanks, Chuck. Mark Anderson again. I like what Jim said. I want to expand on it a little bit and just remind everybody of the conversations we had in the past about role-based contacts. So instead of today where we have registrant admin tech and sometimes billing contacts all as required, you have a domain name contact, a domain name, you know, so the authorized contact point for the domain name registration, and that person has the option of defining additional roles. And if that registrant wants to assign somebody else for purposes of technical contact, they can set up a separate role. But if they don't assign somebody separate, then sort of that registrant, that main contact, assumes that role as well. I'm a proponent of that roles-based approach. I think that was one of the EWG recommendations. And so I think that plays in well to what Jim was suggesting is, you know, when technical contact is available, aka the technical contact role, then you have the option of contacting that person or entity, as Jim pointed out. Otherwise, you fall back on the registrant as your contact point. Just a reminder of that role-based conversation we've had in the past. And then I'll throw out one other sort of separate point or comment. I think there's probably a reason to include the registrar in technical issue resolution. I can imagine any use cases where knowing who the registrar is would be useful for technical issue resolution. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark, and this is Chuck, and I'm looking here. We don't have do we have registrar contact information? Am I overlooking it on this slide? I don't think so. But anyway, thank you for that. Okay, that's good. Let's go to Cal.
Thanks, Cal Fire, for the record. I wanted to, agree with Mark that within the context of technical resolution, the contact will always be the technical contact, whether that's the label they've chosen to apply to themselves or not. So do opt for the role-based allocation to contacts, then that would seem to fit. You're never communicating with someone from the domain name in the context of a technical resolution or for any other purpose. And if you are, then it's doesn't fit into this particular purpose. The other thing I wanted to point out was that although you might have technical problems as a result of life cycle milestones, I would list things here only specific to people that are trying to resolve technical challenges outside of those, because communicating life cycle milestones is up to the redriver typically, and they may have other methods of communicating with the registrant and technical contact. So, for example, the interruption that they might take to a domain name's resolution at the period of expiry will cause technical problems, and people will potentially try and resolve those through Whois. But I don't think there is a reason to communicate with the registrant to tell them that their domain name is about to expire, separate to the communications that a registrar might already send.
So, Cal, this is Chuck. Are you agreeing with Jim that the expiry date, I think Jim said the expiry date, should be included?
Yeah, I think the expiry date should be included. I was just trying to clarify that the fact that those expiry dates might have occurred, we're not expecting the public to communicate with a registrant and say, hey, your domain name's expired.
Okay.
We're assuming that's part of the registrar's responsibility. It's still published, though. The data is certainly useful.
Thanks.
Information.
Thanks, Cal. And keep in mind, too, we'll talk later about whether any, you know, what kind of access would be given for any data elements that we think should be collected for this purpose. Okay, we'll come back to that later, whether it becomes public or gated or whatever. We'll get there as well. So just want to remind everybody of that. Let's go to Susan.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Susan Kaguchi for the record. So I just wanted to clarify on the domain status. We did sort of discuss the fact that server status was probably not the right description last week. But then, Jim, I'm not sure in Jim's explanation whether or not he was using that broader than just a domain status as you see on this Whois record. And, you know, there are actually two other server statuses that could be a possibility there too. But would that also include like the updated date or if there was a hold on the domain, those type of statuses too? So is it a little more broad than just domain status as we see in the record that we're looking at?
And keep in mind, this is Chuck, that domain status, the example given is server update prohibited, so that's not necessarily a server status there. That is a domain status, I think, if I'm stating that accurately, and I'd like Jim to respond to Susan's question there. But before I give it back to Jim, I'd like to request that in the notes we make a list of all of the data elements, even in their broader term, like technical contact information, be listed in one place in the notes so we can kind of see all together the suggestions that have been made so far, even if only one person has supported those. We'll come back later and drill down in terms of how much support there is for all of them. But if we could kind of keep in one place in the notes a list of all of them that have been suggested, and we'll let the people on the call make sure that we have a complete list so far. So, Jim, would you like to respond to Susan's question?
Thanks, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record. No, domain status is what we meant, and just the status that's there. I appreciate that the example shows server update prohibited, but that's a status reference, not related to, you know, the updated date. The updated date and creation date are interesting dates that are known and are mostly present. But the only date information that we had discussed and agreed to for technical issue resolution was the expiry date, was the important reference. And there were some examples given for why that would be a useful thing to have when trying to do technical issue resolution. But we could not find any examples of when an update or create date would be there. So just expiry date and just the domain status as shown there. Domain status is a known reference, a known element in terms of EPP transactions. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Susan, did that answer your question? And if you want to follow up further, that would be fine.
Yes, it did answer my question. And I was starting to type this into the chat, but so then what we need to do, there's actually three domain statuses for server, you know, and I just refer to the server status as the registry status, but that's probably not technically correct. So there's three server statuses, server delete prohibited, server transfer prohibited, and server update prohibited. So we should capture those in our notes.
Not quite.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, not quite. Domain status is the appropriate reference, and that may or may not be a client status or a server status, and there are delete, renew, transfer, update statuses on both the client and the server side. So no, the appropriate reference, which is a known quantity in EPP transactions, is domain status. And it just incorporates all of them by reference.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
I think for clarification and people and for those that are not as familiar, that we should define domain status and provide all the details on the on all of the statuses that could be under domain status.
I agree with that. We can go find the RFC, which defines what they currently are. But I think for purposes of the discussion now, domain status is sufficient. But, yes, I agree with you. Ultimately, we need to lay out all the details. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. This is Chuck. Thanks to both of you. And for everybody's understanding, and I probably don't even need to say this, what we're looking at here is an example. The particular example given, which is an artificial example, example.tld, they're showing four of the possible domain statuses. There are other possible statuses, as Jim pointed out. So don't focus so much on what the status is in this example as the category domain status. Okay? For any particular domain registration, and somebody correct me if I misstate this, but for any particular domain status, for a given domain name, it will list each of the statuses that exist at the present time for that domain name. This example shows four that could exist simultaneously. So, okay. Thanks for that discussion. Notice in the notes what we have so far. Technical contacts, whoever or whatever they may be, registrant contact information, name servers, server status. Now, what is meant by server? Is server status the right term there? And then expiry date and sponsoring registrar. What is meant in the notes there by I think probably we should put domain status instead of server status. That's clarified in the first bullet under that, so that is stated, but I think it would be better to call it domain status instead of server status unless somebody thinks I'm wrong on that. Okay. I should update myself in the chat. Yeah, it said, Jim, you said the same thing I said. Thanks for reinforcing that. So thanks for that parenthetical. That's helpful. McKaylee, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. McKaylee, for the record. Would it help if we just said EPP status? Or is that unhelpful?
Thanks, McKaylee. This is Chuck. And I think, of course, we can decide whichever way we want to do it. Or maybe we put in brackets after the domain status title EPP status. Do you think that would help? Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, Jim Galvin for the record. No, not EPP status, because now you're talking about the EPP protocol itself, and it has many more status codes than domain statuses. The correct term is domain status. That's the correct reference, and that's what we need to detail. Thank you.
You okay with that, McKaylee?
No, sure. I just asked. I was just asking. I don't care one way or the other.
Okay, thanks. That's good. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page as much as we can be. Okay. So let's look at that list that's in the notes there. It's in the bottom part of the notes if you're not down there. Starts off with technical contacts. So what's been suggested so far is that domain name elements associated with those, six categories be collected for the purpose of technical issues, the purpose that we've agreed to so far. Does anybody disagree with any of those, understanding that some of them eventually will have to be defined in more detail as to with regard to specific data elements? But we can take care of that later. Whether it's useful to do that today or later, we can decide. But does anybody disagree with the collection of those categories of contact information or status information for the technical purpose? Does anyone want to add any other categories? Do you think we've got enough? Now, we're going to have to eventually deal with the data minimization principle, which came up, I think, last week, maybe the week before, too. And so we need to keep that in mind and not just throw everything into the pot recklessly. At the same time, it's probably going to be easier to deal with the data minimization principle once we get a set of data elements and we begin to see, now, do we really need all of these? Could it be minimized? And part of that will depend on probably what access is given as well. But so certainly keep that principle in mind, but I think it'll be easier to come back and deal with that once we have a set of data elements that we think should be collected. And, of course, it'll come up again when we talk about access. Susan, go ahead.
So I'm just in your question of, you know, looking at those notes and do we agree with that. So we haven't really discussed what are the data elements associated with the technical contact or the registrant contact. So until we discuss the actual data elements, you know, I couldn't say whether I agree or disagree.
But, and point well taken, that's what I was getting at. And we can decide in this meeting whether we want to dig down and talk about the specific elements or postpone that. I'm comfortable either way, but But you may be right. Maybe it's really hard to answer the question until we do that. But in general, Susan, realizing that we have to take that step that you just mentioned, do you disagree with any of those, assuming the right data elements are included or not included?
No, I agree with that as, the list right now, as long as we discuss the data elements associated with those two roles.
Thank you. Anybody else have a comment on this high-level list that doesn't specify the data elements, except in some cases, like, for example, the name servers and the domain status are pretty well defined, but when we're talking about technical contacts and registrant contacts, it's a little bit different. And sponsoring registrar, it gets into some more detail. Okay. Now, anybody opposed to digging down a little bit further on the contact ones and talking about which data elements should be collected for this purpose? Anybody opposed to that, or anybody want to suggest that we postpone that? I think Susan's right. To fully answer the question of whether or not these categories of information should be collected, we're going to have to define specifically what falls in the category. So I think we have to get there at some point. Is there any reason not to do that now? Okay. Then let's take a look at technical contacts. And again, don't restrict yourself, like Mark said, to what's displayed there. Don't think that we have to include all that. My guess is we probably won't include all of those things. But specific data elements should be included under technical contacts? Anybody want to start it off? Jim, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record. So I'll propose something for discussion purposes here. I think that something along the lines of at least one mechanism, one method of contact, including postal address information. So that's intended to say that either a phone number or an email address or a fax number or anything else that we might come up with, but explicitly not postal information.
So thanks, Jim. I'm going to follow up because I want to make sure I heard you correctly. I don't want to misstate anything. So you wouldn't require postal address, collecting postal address, is that correct? Or you would?
I would not. That's correct.
Okay. No, good. I just want to make sure I got it right. But there needs to be at least one contact method. Is that what? So in other words, that could be email, it could be phone. Could it be postal address, the one contact method?
So I'm implicitly also suggesting a policy that would go with this, which is to say that there must be a method not including postal address for accessing or contacting a technical person.
Okay. That's clear. Thank you. Mark.
Thanks. Mark Anderson for the record. I liked Jim's suggestion. Again, something we've talked about before. The key, in my mind, is contactability. There must be information necessary to contact somebody associated with the technical role for this domain name registration. And, I also agree with Jim's point about, postal info. I think the use cases we've heard, sending somebody a letter via postal service just isn't going to be sufficient. It needs to be something much more real time, such as email or phone. So I agree with Jim's suggestion. I think that's a good starting point for the technical role.
Now this is Chuck again. So going back to our minimum public data set, I know we're not talking about that now, okay, but the reason I'm going back there is when we were doing that kind of work and so forth, we said there had to be at least one email contact. That was an agreement we reached. Should we require, and I'm not advocating for this, I'm just trying to generate thought and discussion, should require a technical email contact, or is Jim's suggestion that as long as there's one, I'll call it a timely method of contact, is that sufficient? Mark, is that a new hand?
Technically, no, but I don't mind jumping in here.
Go ahead.
I don't think it's necessary to require a separate technical contact information. I think if phone is your preferred technical contact mechanism, I think that's sufficient here. And I think if you don't provide it, we already have the requirement, as you pointed out, that an email must be associated with the domain name registration, essentially. So there is an email address already associated with this domain name registration that's available. I think we would want to have the option that a separate technical email address could be provided, but I don't think it's necessary to make it required.
Thanks, Mark. And notice Benny's comment in the chat that it doesn't need a person's name, and that may be something we want to, when we start developing, well, even when we're doing requirements, but even more so maybe when we get to developing policy, we may want to consider developing policies where we discourage use of personal contact information unless the person's willing to allow access to that, but that we can get to that later. But good point, Benny. excuse me. So let's go to Jim. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record. I want to highlight Lisa's reminding us in the chat about working agreement number 32, right? At a minimum, one or more email addresses must be collected for every domain name in the RDS for contact roles, require an email address for contactability. So it's that last phrase, that require an email address for contactability. I want to carefully restate what I was proposing for elements here, which, implicitly has an effect on that working group agreement number 32. I simply said that There must be displayed, with respect to technical contact, there must be a method of contact, not including postal address present. And in fact, I was explicitly not saying that it should be an email address, and I was not saying that it should be a phone number. I think that my personal, going a step further than where this discussion is at the moment, is that the implied policy here is that the tech contact, whoever or whatever that might be, would simply provide you with the most relevant and appropriate contact point from their point of view. So, you know, I think that's consistent here with what Working Group Agreement Number 32 is. But we've been batting around this idea that it has to be an email address. And I want to be just clear about at least my position here, that there needs to be a contact method, not including postal address. And implicit in that is the tech contact picks the one that they want you to have. Or there might be other policies that bear on them, but that's not under discussion here. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. This is Chuck again. And I don't think that contradicts Agreement 32 at all. 32 just says there has to be an email contact in there. It doesn't have to be the tech contact that has an email address. That could be a registrant email, could be admin email, so I don't think there's any contradiction there. Susan, go ahead.
So just adding on to what Jim was saying, so can we jump to the conclusion then that if the tech contact, you know, if we take that thinking down the line and decide that we all decide that the tech contact can decide how they want to be contacted, which could be, you know, so providing very limited information in the RDS available for a technical resolution issue, would we be advocating for verifying that method of contact is actually valid and accurate for that technical person or technical contact.
And thanks, Susan. And I think this is Chuck again. And I think that as we move further and further down the line, and especially when we get into implementation of the requirements and in particular the policies that are developed in phase two, we're probably going to have to consider ways to ensure that the contactability really works. But that's something I think we can deal with later. But I don't want to minimize your point. If somebody provides they just provide one contact method of their choice and it doesn't work, we've got a problem. And so I think that's something we can deal with ultimately in the implementation of the policies that we create. So if we recommend a policy that there has to be one form of contact that's not postal address for technical contact, when we get to the implementation of that policy, we're going to have to recommend ways that what happens if that doesn't work, because that's going to be a flaw. But we can deal with that, and your point's well taken. Maxim, go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. From our registrar side, we had issues with just in response to Susan, with the fact that positive identification of a person's contact on one doesn't mean that it's going to be the same like in a week or in a month. Because formally, currently, users are not prohibited from using the same email number if they can be contacted on the verification stage. And we saw something like people are using the same cell phone, just giving it to the next one for the identification. So and we are not tracking what the person does with his email or his phone or her phone. And thus, I think it's just a formal idea of having a working phone at the stage of registration or update, because we cannot verify it on other stages instantly. So there is no point to think that we have valid contact information. We can check it on update and on collection. That's it.
Thanks, Max. I'm Chuck again. But there's no reason why the working group cannot make it a requirement and ultimately build it into policy and the implementation of that policy that this technical contact information must be current, must be updated. Now, we can get into enforcement and everything else there, but we can deal with that later. McKaylee, go ahead.
Chuck, thanks, McKaylee, for the record. I would be very, very, very wary about creating a policy mandating that any contact needs to be current. How do you actually enforce that? At the moment, there are certain, there's so many instances where people just want to get a domain name in order to be able to set up an online presence, an email address, a web thing. Expecting them to really understand any of these concepts around contactability is realistically, it's a bridge way, way, way too far. And I don't want us to end up in a situation where we're looking after it later, because by then it will be too late. I just don't want us going down that route. Thank you.
So, Michaela, this is Chuck. I want to follow up with you on that because I understand what you're saying, that a lot of people may not understand fully and so forth. But if technical issue resolution is a legitimate purpose and we need to get a hold of someone, it doesn't seem unreasonable to me to require them to keep their that technical contact information updated. Now, agree with you, that may be hard to enforce with some people, but that doesn't make it an invalid requirement.
Chuck, thanks. Okay, Ina, if you want to talk about this at an academic and purely abstract level, what you're saying is completely reasonable. The reality is, as a hosting provider, as a registrar, I can assure you that 90%+ of my clients don't care. And trying to force something like that on them means that they will stop using domain names that have that requirement. I mean, bear in mind that ICANN policies only cover GTLDs. They do not cover ccTLDs. So if you end up in a situation where you're requiring people to jump through hoops in order to register and maintain domain names, they're going to use an alternative that will actually work for them. So like in Ireland for the last 20 years, the .ie ccTLD has been very awkward to deal with. So a larger number of people registered .com domains. Now, if you end up in a situation where 5 years down the road, .com domain names are harder to register, people will just stop using them.
Thanks, McKaylee. Points taken. Jim, go ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. Jim Galvin for the record. I want to draw what I hope is a helpful distinction here. There's a distinction between telling the registrar that they have to make sure that the contact information works and instead having a terms of service, if you will, that says that you, the registrant, are obligated to make sure your technical contact information works. And oh, by the way, if you fail to do that, then, you know, if we ever need that information and it doesn't work, the risk to you is that you lose the domain name. And I think, you know, that distinction between who's accountable, whether it's the registrar or the registrant, is important in this discussion. And I think putting the burden on the registrant would obviously be the way to go. but I'm guessing that's a discussion for another day. Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks, Jim. And as Lisa points out in the chat, what I think is our fifth charter question is on data accuracy. Excuse me. And we will get there, and this will come up there and so forth. But Michaeli's points are important ones to understand. Maxim makes an interesting point as well. And like Jim said, we can have it in the terms of reference. Deciding how to police that and how to ensure accuracy is a subject for another time, and we will get to that. So thank you. if it's okay, let's jump ahead to registrant contacts. Would the contact information for registrants follow the same pattern? I guess I can ask Jim. Jim, would you recommend the same approach for registrant contact information, giving them the choice of a contact method? And would the other elements that we talked about for technical contacts apply for registrant contacts in the same way?
So, Jim Galvin, for the record, yeah, thanks, Chuck. I'm going to resist, you know, having a firm position here on registrant information in general. I mean, unless, you know, there's a question of what's important for a domain name. And, you know, right now we're talking about a particular purpose in mind. So, you know, data needs to be collected for technical issue resolution. This is the data that I need. If you want to be talking about a different purpose, you know, if I have to have registrant information, you know, I think I need to collect registrant information for the business purpose of having a domain name. You know, that's a separate discussion. I'm going to resist having a position at the moment, if you don't mind. Thanks.
No, that's okay, Jim. This is Chuck. I'm just, but we do have registrant contact information as something that should be collected for this purpose, the technical resolution purpose. If we're going to have that, what data elements would be included? And it's okay for you to pass on that, but does somebody have a suggestion?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chuck. Then I misunderstood your question. So yeah, then I'll answer your question. The rules that apply for technical resolution, you know, I mean the idea here is that you need to have contact information, and I would say that, you know, what we want to say is that there should be a role, a technical contact role. That should be present if you agree that technical issue resolution is important. And so what we had said earlier is there should be technical contact information. And the way I had phrased it earlier is if there is no technical contact information present, so implicit in that is perhaps a policy that says, you may not provide all of this role-based contact information. All that really means if you don't provide it is that you will instead inherit whatever is present in the registrant information. So that's the long-winded way of saying yes to you, Chuck. If technical contact information is not present, then the implicit policy is your registrant information then has to get inherited into that particular spot because you need to have technical contact information, and therefore you had better have a method of contact, not including your postal address, available to serve in that role. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And is that and that's being captured in the notes right now. And if anybody thinks that's not sufficient, so in other words, if you don't have the technical contact information, then registrant contact information needs to be supplied to fill that need. Hope I said that right. So, Maxim, go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record, actually reading lots of current spam messages which say, okay, we're contacting you because we failed to contact your administrator. I think it's going to be the next thing to do when we issue such policy. My personal thinking is that making information available to the registrant that if you do not are not sure who is in your TECH contact, please be aware that when technical issue arises and it's not resolvable by contacting the TECH contact, most probably you will have to bear the consequences. I lose your name due to some technical issues, etc. Because I think we will see the rise of spam messages saying, phishing messages saying, yes, we're contacting you because your technical contact was not available. Please give us this and that. Thanks.
So, Maxim, this is Chuck. Am I understanding you correctly that you're okay with the formulation that's in the notes there? If the tech contact role is not supplied, registrant contacts info would be required to fill that need for this purpose. Is that right? You're okay with that formulation?
I'm not sure, but more yes than no.
I didn't. It's say that again, please.
I'm not sure now, but I think it's more yes than no.
Okay, thank you. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson. I guess first I want to reference, Lisa put in chat, you may have to scroll up a little bit, but it was working group agreement 36, and I'm scrolling up to it myself. On purpose-based contacts, purpose-based contacts such as admin, legal, technical, must be supported by the RDS, but optional for registrants to provide. So the discussion was, discussion is sort of implicit that there is a registrant contact of some sort. Right, agreement 36 doesn't work if there isn't a registrant contact, having the purpose-based contact idea is that if the registrant wants to delegate somebody else for technical contacts, and if I remember correctly, we also had a working group agreement that we have to provide definitions for each of those purpose-based roles, so we would know so we would have a definition on when exactly a technical contact would be used, going back to the question, is it necessary? I think a registrant is sort of the default. That's going to be, we're going to have a registrant contact mechanism of some sort for all domain names, and then the option of providing a technical contact role, a purpose-based contact mechanism, if the domain name registrant wants the ability to delegate, technical contacts to it, to another entity or of some sort. So I guess that made sense in my head before I opened my mouth, but I think it's getting late because I'm not sure that came out quite right.
It's really late for you, I know. Thanks. This is Chuck. So let's go to let's quickly go to sponsoring registrar and see if we can just talk briefly before we end this meeting on what specific data elements would be required for this technical purpose for collection in in our delineation of the specific data elements for sponsoring registrar. Anybody want to kick that one off? Go ahead, Jim. You've been a great asset tonight. Thanks.
Yeah, so Jim Gallen for the record again. Thanks, Chuck. Why not? Let's kick things off here. There's really only two interesting elements, the IANA ID, you know, or the name, and there really is just no reason not to have both. Why make someone have to do the lookup? I mean, the IANA ID is obviously sort of the obvious index thing that one should have to do, but I don't see any reason to exclude the name too. Otherwise, you're just making somebody go look it up. So there you go. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. McKaylee.
Thanks. No, I totally agree. I would go so far as to say, I mean, while the IANA ID might be useful for people who know what an IANA ID, the actual name and a link to the registrar's website is useful. Ultimately, if you want to resolve a lot of issues, knowing who the registrar is helpful, and you know can help you to get something done. Knowing who the registrant is might not be particularly useful.
Thanks, McKaylee. So you would add to what Jim said the link to the registrar's website as well. Is that correct?
Yes, and I'll explain to you the rationale is that some registrar entities, if you look at the IANA list, have kind of mumbo jumbo crazy names don't bear any relation to reality. Whereas 250 accreditations all actually end up pointing to whatever the hell .com. It's like having a link so somebody can click on the link and go, right, oh, so that's who that is, rather than telling me mumbojumbo.com, registrar, LLC, blah, 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 which is meaningless. Whereas if you said to me, well, actually, Mumbo Jumbo is, a trading name of, Black Knight or GoDaddy or whoever. Yeah, anyway, just the link, as I say, it's simpler, it's easier. I don't have to jump through hoops. I don't have to...
Yeah.
Hurt small animals to get a simple bit of information that I should be able to get. Look, as registrars, our information is public. There's no issue with making it public. Anybody who thinks there's an issue with making it public really should consider not being in business.
Thanks, McKaylee. And keep in mind, we'll come back later and talk about what type of access, whether it be public or gated or whatever, for each of these data elements. But for right now, there seems to be support for collecting this information to the extent that, keep in mind that sometimes it's not collected, sometimes it's automatic. I think we all know that by now. We've been over that many times. Let's go to Maxim. Okay, hand went down.
It wasn't.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it wasn't old.
Okay, thank you, Maxim. So now we have a list of data elements for these categories. Does anybody disagree with any of those being collected for the purpose of the technical reason that we're talking about tonight? No objections to that. Okay, very good. So we will poll on this list. It's going to be a longer poll in the sense that we've got a big list here, but I don't think necessarily complicated. We'll ask people, I'm sure, although we haven't designed the poll yet, to identify any they disagree with or any that are left out. But I think we made really good progress here on this, and we will test it in a poll this week. So watch for that. And those, I hope those on the call will participate. And of course, we want people who weren't on the call to chime in as well, so that we hopefully can reach another tentative working group agreement on the data elements to be collected for this purpose under these categories. is there any other discussion on these data elements for this particular, collecting these for this purpose? Okay. Go ahead, Maxim.
Maxim, also for the record, we have expiry date. Currently, actually, you have an expiry date and time. And as I see, expiry date is useful for the registrant, so he doesn't forget to pay on time. But expiry time is something really useful for registrar and registry. I'm not sure it needs to be published, because what we see now is registry, that the closer the time to the expiry time, the more requests we have for that particular name. I'm not sure it's in interest of registrant to publish the full
time. Keep in mind, we're not talking about whether we publish it yet or not, but you're okay with expiry date. Is that correct?
Yes, expiry date for publishing, and for collection, obviously, we need the timestamp with all.
We're just talking about collection now.
For collection, full. Now, for collection, it should be full.
I'm sorry, you cut off there. For collection, it should be what?
For collection, it should be full timestamp with all the seconds and parts of seconds.
So for collection, it should be expiry date and time.
Yes.
Okay, does anybody disagree with that? Okay, so we'll add date and time. Thanks for that. Okay, we're within a few minutes of our adjournment time. Let's quickly go over the action items, and they're in the notes, the poll. Okay. Please watch for that. We'll try and get it out quickly. Now, it's a little later in the week than it normally is, so you have just a little bit less time to complete it. But at least for those on the call, it should be fairly easy to respond to the poll. So please do, and hopefully others will listen to the recording or look at the transcript and join us, so that we next week, our meeting will be at our regular time next Tuesday. So we will do that. Is there anything else we need to cover on this call? Okay. All right. So let's go ahead then and let me say thanks to the great contributions on this call, those that were active and verbal, as well as the rest of you for participating. I'm assuming that you would have expressed disagreement if you had any. So I think this has been very productive, and we made some good progress tonight. Hopefully the poll will reinforce that, or at least identify any things that need further work by our working group. That said, let me adjourn the meeting, and the recording can stop. Thanks a lot, everyone, certainly feel free to participate on our list as we continue discussing these issues. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you very much, everybody. You may now disconnect your line. This meeting is over. Operator, please stop the recordings and have a great remainder of your day. Bye-bye.